Whenever I see a fool, I am looking at myself. This is God Unlimited, University of Healing, Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean at Campo, California, bringing you the instant inspiration. Now, I don't know too much inspiration that's in this here, but what it says is, whenever I see a fool, I am looking at myself. Now, you know me. And would I say something like that?
No.
What would I?
When I see God, I look at one.
No, when I look at my reflection, I see God. Or when I look at another person, I see God. And I'm looking at myself. But when I see a fool, I am looking at myself. Now, isn't that a beautiful human response?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful human response. And we oftentimes tie ourselves up with these beautiful human responses, and we feel so good and so comfortable. Isn't that cute? Isn't that charming? No, it isn't. It's very distressing. It's like saying, every time I look at a sick person, I'm sick. Every time I look at a person who is mentally retarded, I am mentally retarded. Every time I look at a problem in the world, I am the problem. But it's true. It is true. But it is not the way we want to address ourselves to them. Every time I look at the world, I see the beauty from within me, shining out, radiating in everything that I look upon. Can you understand that?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I have been having such a tussle with Ellen. We've been working on this now for the last 100,000 years, and maybe even before that. I just don't recall that, you know. But for the last 100,000 years at least, I would say something fabulous, and Ellen would say, wow, I can hardly believe it. I can hardly believe it. I can't believe it. And I say, Ellen, that's not a very positive statement. Say, yes, I believe. For every drop of rain that falls, flowers grow. Do you believe that?
Oh, yes.
You see, when we recognize who we are and we believe who we are, magic happens in our life. However, if we believe we're something limiting, then that magic happens in our life too. And both magics, we must remember, both magics are an illusion. Both the good and the not so good. It's all an illusion. So, if I give you permission to have one of two illusions, which illusion would you take? The happy illusion or the sad illusion? Now, a lot of people take the sad. A lot of people have a very martyrish complex about them. Martyrdom is their forte, and they feel that, you know, it's not right to be so happy. Think of the poor people around the world. What the hell with the poor people around the world? Herb, that's not nice to say. Yes, it is. I don't think of the poor people around the world. As I told you so often before, the little children in Africa, let's say, who are running around naked and running across the sands and having a great old time, they're happy. They don't know that they should have clothes. They don't know that they should have all sorts of goodies like kids in other countries have. Now, you go to another country. You go to New York, for instance, and the little boy has a little fire engine. He drives around. Ding, ding, clang, clang, bing, bing, and having a ball. And then the neighbor kid, he says, Daddy, how come I don't have a fire engine? And Daddy says, well, because they're quite expensive. And I want a fire engine. And so he finally gets a fire engine. And then he plays with it for a little while and puts it away, as all toys get put away, or whatever happens to him. And then he goes on to something else. Now, if the children were taught by their parents to find joy in simple things, I lived during the Depression time in the United States, and I didn't know it was Depression time because we always had enough to eat, maybe not as much as the things we wanted, but we always had enough to eat, a lot of bread and potatoes and stuff. And my mother said, one day when I came home and told her, I said, my friend is going to go butterfly hunting. And she says, oh, how wonderful. She says, let me help you make a net. And so she helped me make a net. They bent a piece of stick around, tied it to a pole, and sewed some old curtain to it, you know, that you could see through, and we made a net. It was as good as the other guy's net, and his mama made that for him. But we went out butterfly hunting, and we spent the whole day chasing butterflies, and they all eluded us. And that's because we didn't stop and let them come to us. We chased them. Well, we did this for a week, and we had a lot of good exercise. We come home tired, but happy. And then I told my mom one day, I said, Mom, why is it that we cannot catch those butterflies? They're not so fast. They're not so intelligent. They're not more intelligent than we are. And she says, oh, yes, they are. They know you're going to chase them. And so they know which direction you're going to go, so they go the opposite direction. Now, what you want to do is just to sit still and let them come to you. And we did this. And as we sat still, just having the time of our life, the butterflies came to us. And we caught them. And we were not very nice. We put them in a jar, and then they died. But we caught them, and we found them. And it was a wonderful thing. And another time, we had nothing to do, kids, you know. And it was evening, and the fireflies came out. And they were so wonderful with their little glowing tails. And so we would catch them and put them in glass. And then say, look, we got our flashlight. Couldn't see anything with it, but it was kind of fun. And we played with nature. We played with life. We played with things that were available to us. And it was always fun. Mm-hmm. And the YMCA was way downtown in Milwaukee. And to get down there, you have to get on the bus or the streetcar or both. And it takes about an hour and a half. And then you have to put in, what was it, a nickel for car fare, you know, and you got to transfer to come back again. So that was kind of nice. But still, that nickel was a lot. That nickel would buy us into the theater, too. So we went down to the river, and we went down to the river, and it was just a scoochily little river that was running through the farmlands and coming into the city. And we were out in the rural area, so it was more farmy. And the cows did their duty in there, and other animals, you know, left their residue there. And we swam in there. And we swam and we swam. We had a deeper area where there was sort of a hole. And we just had a good time. And we didn't have any swimming suits. We didn't have anything. We just hung our clothes on the thing. It was all we were, our clothes were a pair of shorts. And we just hung them there. And we swam and just had a great time. Never thought a thing about it. Never thought a thing about it. But we were having fun. Now, we created fun. Wherever we went, we created fun. We say, wow, this is neat. I love Menominee River. I love this swimming here. Now it's all modernized, all with concrete abutments on it and beautiful lawns going down to it and parks and lovely houses and things like that. The old Menominee isn't there anymore, but that didn't matter. When we wanted it, it was there. Now, today, children work on a little different level. And they need a lot more money for the level they're working on. But when I was head of the Cub Scouts, I took the Cubs out in the country. And we didn't have tents, and we didn't have a lot of other things, but we just went out for walking. And we would walk through the woods, and we'd walk through the countryside, and I was studying forestry at the time, so I knew all the trees, and I knew all the plants. Oh, I was so brilliant. And I told them all about it. And so some of the kids would come up and say, look, what is this? And I would say, put it down. Now let's go wash your hands. That's poison ivy. I said, you don't want that. You don't want that. So let's go wash our hands, and then it won't bother you at all. And we went to the river and washed our hands, and everything was okay. But you never know what these kids are going to do and what wonderful adventures. And then all of them went home, and they told their parents, do you know what? I found these three leaf plants that are so beautiful and so nice and shiny, and I picked them. And then the cub master, he says, let's go wash your hands now and put that down, and that's poison ivy, and we don't want poison ivy, you know. And the mother, and some of the homes, they said, oh, you got poison ivy, oh! and the kids develop poison ivy. In some other homes where the kids handle it just as well, the mother says, oh, good, I'm glad you washed your hands right away. That's done. And you see, this is how it goes. We had fun. And they had fun doing the little things, and they enjoyed it. And they couldn't wait till Saturday would come, and I would take them out, and we'd go places. And we not only talked about the plants and the flowers and whatever was around us, but we talked about who we are and what kind of people we were. And every one of those kids today are the leaders of industry and business and politics in Wisconsin. They're all the top dogs. And you say, well, Harold, how do you know that? Because I read about them. They're wonderful. But now, did they do that to themselves? Mm-hmm. Who did they create in their life?
You.
They created someone they could respect and love. They created someone who cared about them unconditionally, who didn't care whether this was a bright one and this was a dumb one. They were all bright. They were all brilliant, wonderful kids. And every one of them began to realize that and lived it. Now, when I see a fool, I'm looking at myself. When I see a genius, I'm looking at myself. That's what I taught them. When I see fun, I'm part of it. Like, what do we say around here for birthdays and unbirthdays? Party time! Party time! Not beer and wine and whiskey and other silly things, but just a party time. Just maybe a cake. And maybe popcorn. And maybe something else, you know. But party time is when you just break your regular routine and just have a lot of laughs and a lot of fun. And that's what we love to do, is to party time. I tried to teach Ellen that at her home, but she locked up the wine spit cellar. that was Elias who locked it up. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. We all had a good time there. And our whole gang would meet at her house. Patrick and Jan and Stefan and
the whole seminar group,
right? And nobody was using her house, you know, just she and her husband who was somewhere else, and she was just there, and so we had to put a little sparkle in the house, and we helped her clean it up.
Yes.
We ate the food and drank the wine, and we had a wonderful time. But you see, this is what it really is all about. You know what she didn't do? Now that I think about it, she knew that all of us were there. And we were 10, 20 people, whatever it was. And she only had a little car. You would think with all of her moolah, all of her money, she would have gone out and bought some lovely big bus for us to ride around in. Some big stretch limousine, you know, to go around and see the things we were doing. But she didn't do that. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do that. And now why? Because she couldn't conceive of herself riding in a stretch limousine. And I would conceive of it for her, but that didn't help. But I conceive, you see, Ellen is interesting again. I went to her home with my personal eyes. And I personally live in opulence and abundance and joy and peace and harmony. I don't need it, but I live in it. And when I went to her house, everything I saw was opulence and abundance. But she wants to belittle it. Oh, that's not real. And what should she do? Say, you're right. You're damn right. I had a wonderful house. Rich, beautiful, marble floors, gold fixtures in all the bathrooms. And I had a Bugelfrau and a Putzfrau. You know what a Bugelfrau is? That's a someone who comes in just to iron for you.
Okay.
And you know what a Putzfrau is? You know, Putz, dirt, Putz. A Putzfrau is a lady who comes in and cleans.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were sitting at breakfast, and the Putzfrau and the other one came in, and Ellen says to them, and they're not supposed to be serving us. They're supposed to be doing their job. Ellen says, would you bring us some tea? Would you bring us some coffee? Would you fry an egg for us? Would you? And here we were sitting at the table acting like a bunch of, you know, rich, rich, rich people. And we were. And she would say that to the people, and they didn't mind. They didn't mind at all, because that made more hours on their day. And they were paid handsomely, because they were in the Hoi Polloi district there, you know, in a very rich district. But, you see, this is what we look out on. We look out on the world, and we see who we are. Wherever I went, I only saw healthy, wealthy, beautiful beings, harmonious beings. We had a lake cottage, and I could never envision anyone else not having a lake cottage. Because we had one, I was sure everybody else had one. And I'd go back to school in the fall, and I'd say, well, we sure had fun this summer swimming and stuff. And they'd say, where did you go? Well, we went to our lake cottage. A lake cottage? Wow, that's nice. And this was a school in a very, prosperous area. But every father did not feel the need to have a summer home for his family. Every father did not feel the need to build it himself and create it for his family and give it to him. But my dad did, and it's only because he was just unconditional love. And it's wonderful. We don't always appreciate it at the time because we think that, naturally, he should do that. He should do that. And you know what, my dad, he was a meanie. He worked during the week. He didn't even come play with us all week long. He should have come play with us all week long, not work. Who needs to have a father who goes to work all the time? He's supposed to play with us kids, right?
Yeah,
my goodness sakes. And he didn't do that. But we loved him anyhow. And this is how we see the world. We see the world through our eyes. And the world out there may have all sorts of growing experiences or all sorts of illusions that they haven't come to terms with yet. But if we've come to terms with our illusions, then anything we see out in our world that we have created will be our illusion. Mm-hmm. Our illusion of abundance and harmony and peace and love and goodness and truth and joy. You see, this is more of our spiritual quality than we know. And I cannot reiterate too often, everything, all things, all ideas, all the world is spiritual. There is nothing that exists that's not spiritual. Nothing. Everything is spiritual. And if God created all things and called it good, then it's good. No. Who are we to call anything bad? Who are we, beautiful truck, to call anything evil? Who are we to do that? Now, we see our handyman come up with his Ranger green pickup truck and doing just fine. And then the next day, he drives up with a great big 250 Ford, all white and brand new, and we think to ourselves, wow, that guy is moving in the high lane. And he is. He's doing just great. So that's what we can do. We can move on the high lane. We can really move on the area that is our highest and best and fabulous, and it's up to us how we do it. If we want to live in limitation, we do it. Here, this handyman who works for us, he works 2 days a week, and he usually puts in 2 hours a day, which is not a heck of a lot. And what he does other days, I have no idea. But here he is, living opulently. He wanted to have a lovely home for his son and himself. And so he creates himself being the caretaker of a beautiful several hundred acre ranch with a lovely house to live in, with a swimming pool, with everything. I mean, my goodness sakes. And the guy who owns the place is never there. So it's like virtually his, I mean, what a creator. Now, he had that in his mind. Otherwise, it couldn't happen. And he has many things in his mind. And he is a good man. And we love him because we love ourselves. Now, are you ready to live your life from your own inner awareness? And what inner awareness? Ellen is just in the process of getting tickets for our flight in fall to Ghana, Nigeria, Switzerland, Germany, and wherever all we're going. And she called the travel agency, and the travel agency gave us some outrageous prices. And she thought to herself, this is not right. There's a better way. Now, how is Ellen going to find the better way? Tell me.
By getting into herself and seeing that all her parts are filled with pleasantness.
Right. You got the message, Mrs. J?
Yes.
You just listen to your inner voice, and it will tell you right away that all your paths are pleasantness and all your ways are peace, and you will go there, and you will, in fact, you won't even have to go there. It'll probably come across your desk as some literature, a mailer saying, airline tickets for Ellen Germany. But this is what you want. If you go searching, you don't find it. Mm-hmm. If you open up the doorways so that it can be revealed to you, mm-hmm. you find it. Yeah. See, there's a big difference mm-hmm. between searching and letting it be revealed to you mm-hmm. and getting excited about it. Mm-hmm. I love to have words and so on, and I teach people words. And then I say, okay, now that word means this. Now let's go here. Oh, here's another word in the dictionary. Now let's see what the thesaurus would say. And pretty soon, they're as excited about words and dictionaries and things as I am. And that's good. But I see what I am. Sylvia is a master of words because I'm a master of words. And Ellen speaks exquisite English because I speak exquisite English. And Ellen doesn't argue about English that is bad, saying some people use it. She discusses with me that all English should be its finest and best. Mm-hmm. And that's all we're concerned about. So, when I see all good, I am looking at myself. And that's all there is to it. I love you. I love you. I love you.